Welcome back to the Mini PC Show. This is Big Talk, Little Machines. My name's Eric. Tonight we have with us Dor and Brian. How are you guys doing tonight?
I am doing absolutely fabulous. I am stoked to be here once again, joining my my compadres to talk about these tiny machines.
I'm doing pretty good, Eric. It has been a uneventful but eventful week in the McLaughlin household. Nothing bad per se, except of course my youngest one having a meltdown in school, which is once again I think it might be becoming normal again. You know, ebbs and tides and flows and stuff. And you know, how are you doing?
Doing good. Can I give you? Should I give you a mansion report update? All yes. Of the machinery has moved away.
And what about all of the reclaimed wood you were trying to do?
Reclaimed wood that I had harvested all last summer is in the garage safe, but all the other wood that was not reclaimed and the rest of the house went in five or six semi-truck loads to somewhere.
So your full-fledged month-long attempt at raccoon racism has been successful? You have kicked them out of their house?
Yeah, well, the raccoons are gone. There was an issue with a woodchuck and the demolition company. The demolition company picked up a piece of sidewalk and moved it over and about dropped it on a woodchuck that crawled out of a hole. And so the guy, which I hats off to this guy because I would never. I mean, I trapped 13 of them like three summers ago, and this guy picked it up with his bare hand and walked him out to the edge of the park. Because I live right up along the edge of a park, walked it back there, let him go, and the rascal ran right back to underneath the sidewalk where he just got moved from. So he did it again, and then now he's living under my shed, it sounds like, which is fine for now.
I'm not picking anything up like that with my bare hands.
Oh, man, they're tough. I mean, just having them in the live trap, when I trapped them, they would get moving. They got so much muscle behind them. There's no way. I don't think I would have been able to keep them under control. Grabbing him by the back like
that's
that.
That's what she said last.
Yeah? Is that what she said?
So, we don't have any email this week, do we?
I didn't see any. So,
okay. This to me is the normal girth roller coaster effect in podcasting. We now have no email. So, I will implore people out there if you have any questions, any suggestions, any comments. The most efficient place to get your questions or whatever answered is by sending in an email to the show. If you want a off-the-record conversation, yet in public, you go to the Google Plus community.
And if you want to be famous, give us a voicemail.
Yes, just like with the one we have this week.
Yeah. Should we play that one?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Hey, Mini PC Show, Lord Dark Loot, the Digital Dragon. The device they're using on librarybox.us is actually a TP-Link MR3040. So you can build your own using one of those, or you can buy one. I recommend most people to build their own because buying one, they're asking for $150 US for one, whereas you can buy the TP-Link MR30 yourself for about $30. And there is another option. This one, there's actually several versions of TP-Link hardware you can use. And the most interesting is the TP-Link MR13U, which has a 10,000 milliamp hour battery built in.
Was that it?
Yep. Okay, that's the voicemail from Matthew Williams. Matthew Williams hosts website Open False Training, where he did an Indiegogo campaign, raised some money. Now he's releasing content on teaching people how to do beginner stuff with FOSS, whether it be software or hardware. He's done like VMware or VirtualBox, videos and stuff showing you how to do that. This guy has uncanny thirst for knowledge in a lot of arenas, and this is just an example of one of them. He pulled this piece of hardware right out of his butt. He knew exactly what it was. It's the and the one we looked at last week that was the rectangle, because remember we saw the one that was a square, then we saw the other one that was a rectangle on the website where you could buy it for $150. He nailed it. This is it, the TP-Link MR13U, which right now on at least Amazon is unavailable. So if you can get this, he said, around $50, he said. And this does look exactly like it. TP-Link was, I believe is the correct vernacular, very open with all their hardware to where you could do a lot of crazy stuff. I believe TP-Link was the one that just announced last week. In the future, all of their hardware is going to be much more locked down thanks to the federal regulations that are coming forth. So if you want to do this kind of thing, the time to get your hardware is now.
Yeah, notice that the TP-Link MR3040 is available on Amazon. There's only two left, and they're running about $41.49. But the 13U, like you said, is not available. I did notice that the 3040 has two different flavors. One is an 802.11 model, and there's another model here that is 3G and 4G as well, too, capability with battery powered backup, which is not a battery pack, not backup, but it has a battery pack with it. And that's running for $49.99 without Prime. So they're selling it for $39.99 if you had Prime service. But yeah, these look very, very sleek. You know, I was really intrigued when I saw the battery associated with it.
Yeah, TP-Link, I really don't want to speak ill of them, but they were doing a lot of very forward-thinking kind of things. I mean, they were the ones that did the Google On Hub, and I think it was because they were so willing to do other things. This is also the same company. You could buy hardware, I believe, on it, and what was on it was OpenWRT or DDWRT, which is the open source router software. So they were really doing that open thing really good. I still like them. I still support them. I think their hardware is much better than average. In fact, the router sitting right next to me is indeed a TP-Link. So this is a really good find. Really good eye, Matthew. I salute you. Your eye for hardware is second to none.
So this is a battery powered router that you can either hook a LAN into to make it a wireless router that's wireless N. I'm talking about the 3040. Or then you take a USB 3G, 4G modem. I assume you put a SIM card in that, and then you have a wireless access point, which is taking cellular data and retransmitting it over Wi-Fi.
Absolutely.
Yes. This can do both, be a wireless access point for a hardwired internet connection, or can be an access point for 3G, 4G, or you can even do the inverse and use the wireless to connect to something else and become a extension, a Wi-Fi extender. TP-Link hardware is very versatile. Very versatile.
So you would get like a SIM card from, like, say, like a prepaid plan or something, maybe, or.
Well, I mean, knowing TP-Link, they're going to be more of a world thing. So it's going to be AT&T, the mobile compatible. If it is SIM card, you just stick the SIM card in, but honestly, I do not know.
I see it has a switch on the side that has 3G, 4G, and then WISP, and then AP. But then it also says it's got a USB for a 3G, 4G modem, and it shows a separate, like, thumb drive-looking thing going into the USB port.
Then that's using the little dongle they have.
That'd be, you know, how the Chevy commercials are, you know, showing how they've got a wireless hotspot built into the car. This would be exactly the same for any other car as long as you have a data plan and a SIM card.
The only problem I have with that is how many times you have to pay for the same access to the internet, you know? it drives me crazy.
Yeah, I can't remember. I was listening to, it was somebody who read audiobooks, I can't remember, talking about a book from the 90s where the guy said, very poignantly in the book, bits are bits. And he said, that really stuck with me. That really made me think. And he was like under firm agreement that all bits should be treated the same. And I'm a firm believer. If you're paying for internet service, it doesn't matter what's happening to it. It doesn't matter if you're tethered or if it's just going straight into your phone. It should be all the same plan, all the same fee.
I fully agree. And I feel really bad for the folks in Canada. They seem to get particularly less service for the amount of money they're paying for.
Well, but they have really good maple syrup, so I guess that makes it okay.
No, that's funny because I remember back when I could get nothing but dial-up here in the 90s, and I was always so jealous because all the people in Canada who I were talking to on chat boards and things like that, they all had high-speed internet back then, and we were behind. I'm glad the ones who came up with the technology and got it all installed all over the, well, maybe not installed, but shared our technology with the world, finally caught up to Canada. I'm sorry for them that they can't keep up.
Well, I hate to say, but the United States is still kind of behind worldwide too as well. I mean, we're doing better than Canada, but
yeah,
we're still not where we need to be.
Yeah, I keep thinking the square footage of a company, of a country, square footage of a country has something to say about how good of a broadband service it's going to be. The more square mileage you have to get on a backbone does seem harder to be, kind of like how we have horrible mass transit. I think part of the reason is our cities and our landscape is so expansive.
And old, too, as well.
Oh, you got to tell me. I'm in the same camp as you. Some of our neighborhood and city layouts precede cars. So there's a reason why the roads are really narrow and there's no sidewalks in some places.
Man, that's pretty bad. So I'm sure some people are saying, what in the world does all of this have to do with mini PCs?
You know, I was telling you, I went to Washington D. I was so impressed with the mall and how wide everything there was. What foresight they had in thinking that they might need that extra space at some point. But it is very wide and spread out there, unlike a lot of places on the East Coast.
Yeah. Now, didn't you have a topic you wanted to bring to the show, Brian?
I did. I just wanted to kind of put out to our listeners out there and kind of get some feedback. I was having a conversation on G+. A few days ago, and I was showcasing a discount price on one of the ITX, a mini ITX PC. It was actually a Core i3. And it wasn't the latest and greatest, but I thought it was pretty compact and pretty powerful enough to get some decent work done. And somebody had made a comment, which I've heard before in the past on many other shows, is that with a mini PC, you just can't really get any real work done. So I asked the question, I'm like, what is real work? You know, I'm a computer engineer myself and, network engineer myself. And I tend to log into a lot of various devices via Telnet, via SSH. And, I'm running I don't even know what kind of Dell laptop it is, but it's not the latest and greatest by any means. It's a Core i5 with 8 gigs of RAM. And to me, that's kind of overkill to what I need to do. I was just kind of reiterating it in the comments on the post, is that if I had a phone like my LG G4 with the same processing power, if I were to connect it to a monitor or some type of device that would turn it into a laptop or fully functional desktop, I could pretty much do the same thing that I'm doing at my job, which is create documents. I could do voice to text, text to speech. I could do emails. I could do spreadsheets. I could log into various devices, given the various apps that I need. And I could do my work. The only really thing that really gets me on that is if I had a gigabit Ethernet. And some points in time where I really need to prove that, hey, I could pass traffic over 100 meg on this link. And, without that gigabit Ethernet port, I wouldn't be able to do that. But given that said, that's an ARM processor. ARM processors have been around for a long time.
Would there be a possibility for an OTG cable into some kind of a USB gigabit Ethernet port? I don't know if that's a thing or not.
You wouldn't get gig speed.
Okay. Yeah, there'd be a bottleneck on the USB mini port. I think the only way you were going to see gigabit speeds is if it was a USB-C connection or some type of proprietary connection that would allow you to get power and pass data at the same time. But like I was saying, that's an ARM processor. Now we have the x86 platform has been around for a long time too. And to be quite honest, a high-end AMD processor, I'm not a processor expert, so I'm not going to try to speak what I don't know. But what I do know is by experience, if I had a Core i3 or an AMD processor, I could still probably get some real work done. But I guess that all depends. And Dor and I, you or I were talking about this earlier. It all depends on what real work is.
Well, I'll say for somebody complaining about the power of a computer, to me, that's one of the most specious and pointless arguments ever. It's like no matter what car you see, you say, huh, well, it's not a McLaren F1. Well, you're right. It's not a McLaren F1, but it's a pickup truck, and I need to haul wood, and a McLaren F1 is not right for the task that I need it to do. The likelihood of finding a computer to fit everyone's needs and hit the right price point is a mystical, magical, never-appearing thing. It's not going to happen. This is like a engineer's number one rule. You use the right tool for the right job. And that i3 will meet a huge amount of job task completion, whether it is a business office person just literally sitting at their desk, answering phones, handling meeting requests and emails, or it's somebody sitting at home who just loves to search Imgur for goats and then likes to go on Facebook. You have to match, you know, this is the hugest, worstest question I've gotten repetitively in my podcasting, quote unquote, life. And that is, hey, Dor, what's the best X? Whether it is, what's the best Linux distro? What's the best laptop? What's the best phone? What's the best mini computer? There is no best. That is such a loaded question. That's like asking me, hey, Dor, what time are you going to die? How can I possibly give you a right answer? It's impossible. Anybody who considers themselves at all knowledgeable in any field, when asked what is the best X, will follow it up with at least 20 questions back to that person. What do you want to use it for? Do you want to do X? Do you want to do Y? Do you have a preferred this? Are you right-handed? Are you left-handed? Are you short? Are you tall? Do you need foreign language? You know, you're going to ask all these questions because you have to match. This is like those crappy Hollywood movies where they match people up. You know what I mean? You can't just be walking with somebody and point and say, hey, there's your ideal mate. You know, because you have to get to know both parties. You know, you have to get to know the person and the need, and you have to get to know the hardware and what it can do. Every piece of hardware out there has a soulmate. And let's not shun it if it isn't your soulmate, is my logic.
I think a lot of, I'd say most of the time, or almost every time, I, in the past, have failed forward when trying to make that match. I would probably need an i5 and buy an i7. I would probably need 4 gigs and get 16 of RAM. You know, just in case. You don't want to underwhelm yourself, but you typically don't use everything. You know, maybe I will want to play a game on this thing sometime, so I'll, you know, just get something a little better graphics card than I probably will ever need. And then, you know, and then it kind of future proofs you a little bit if, in case that certain something comes along later that you do want to try to use.
And to be honest, that is the right way to do it, Eric. Always. You always want to fail ahead, going a little bit further than you have to or you need to. But I know where I'm at. I'll use the example of, you don't give a 16-year-old who just got their license a McLaren F1 unless you want them to die. If the person's job at work is literally to do very light word processing, very light Excel spreadsheet kind of task, you do not give them an i7 with a NVIDIA graphics 970 G, you know, a video card, or else all those YouTube videos are going to play a little bit too well. So you want to purposefully hold them back and restrict them back to give them something that closer matches what they should be doing, maybe not what they want to do. When it comes to you and me and Brian, and yeah, hell yeah, we, you know, yes, an i3 could do what we want to do, but do we want an i3? Probably not.
Yeah, no.
You know what I mean?
When I was 16, I got the $1,200 car that I bought, and before I graduated from high school, I had put a 455 big block in that. You know, that's just, and I, you know, and if I was a 16-year-old now, I probably would get a fairly generic Walmart case. With a AMD E1 processor. Not that I would buy that myself, but that's what I would have given to me, and I would upgrade everything inside that box.
I'm tempted to give my son a milk crate with the motherboard zip-tied nice. To it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's what I'm tempted to do.
That's the way to do it.
Go to town.
you can set a monitor on top of a milk crate a lot better than you can these cases that you buy at Walmart, because they're just too skinny and rounded. Right.
Exactly.
I fully agree. But it's kind of hard to future-proof with some of the mini PCs that we're seeing. You know, when I see a mini PC that has 4 gigs of RAM. You know, that kind of piques my interest. When I see 8 gigs, I'm a little bit more than interested. But, you know, 16, gosh. Oh, sign me up. Take my money, please.
Right, exactly. I wanted to show off two things really quick before we get completely started. And the first, I'm just showing it to the other co-host so they can see it as well. This is something we brought up maybe 3 weeks ago on the show. It's the Z-Sun Smart Card Reader. It has a built-in Wi-Fi and maximum 2 terabit SD card reader on it. Connects via USB to your computer, then you can set up as a Wi-Fi access point and share the data out. This is the device you could install, you could turn into a router, and you can actually use as like a Wi-Fi hotspot kind of thing. I'm going to give this away to someone listening to the show, and what I'll say is, if you want this, send us an email. And whoever sends us, you know, the good email for the week that we like, next week we will give it away to that person.
So in theory, you could plug that into a USB, in either if your car radio has a USB, you can plug it in there, or you could plug it into a cigarette adapter USB and have a Wi-Fi hotspot in your car, just like I was talking about with that other thing earlier.
Yes. What the example I saw on the website was you connect the USB up to a portable like phone charger, and then you have the SD card sitting in it, and what you have is basically the exact same kind of thing as the library box, where you're running around with an access point you can connect to, and then you can give people access to that internal storage so they can download.
So you have an SD card and a SIM card in it?
No, SD card, USB, and wireless.
Oh, I thought you said it was a SIM card. Oh, okay.
No,
I'm sorry.
No, it's called the Z Sun.
Okay, I thought you said SIM card when you first said it. Okay.
No, so send us an email if you want it, and say something more in the email than "I want it." Talk to us about mini PCs. Ask us what we like. Tell us what you use. Tell us what you like to do, and you'll win.
Ask us which mini PC you should buy.
Yeah, sure. Okay. And I had a second piece of hardware I wanted to show off. The Z-Sun thing I did buy out of my own pocket just because I couldn't help it. It was only like $15. But this next thing I did not buy. This is a chip. C period, H period, I period, P period. This is the $9 computer. Steve Sears, a listener over on the West Coast, unbelievably nice guy I met at Northwest Linux Fest, pledged to get the cheapest version of the chip, and he just got his. I also pledged for the chip, but my pledge is not due to be shipped out until May. So he sent this out. I literally just got it today, so I haven't even had a chance to even open it up. This is quite literally the quote-unquote crazy computer. I got a guy at work who's interested in mini computers, and he wants to put one inside what's called a gang box, which I'm sure at least one of you guys know what a gang box is. I don't. What is a gang box?
That's what she said. I don't know. You used it earlier, Dor, so I just had to throw that out there.
I know. I'm sorry.
I don't know what a gang box is. It could be. Go ahead. Go ahead, Brian.
No, it's like a like electrical box. It's something you put your house wiring into.
Yeah, that's the impression I got. Like the light box you have, the light switch you have on the wall. If you take off the switch plate, there's a box. That box, but it's just behind the walls where like two things meet or things meet. Okay. And he wants to be able to put a mini computer inside a gang box to do home automation, Internet of Things kind of thing. And I showed him the Orange Pi, and he said, "No, it's like 3/4," and it was like a 3/7 of an inch too big to fit inside a gang box. I'm like, geez. So I'm going to bring this into work tomorrow. And as you guys can see on the camera right now, this thing is tiny. Yes, it is. This thing is unbelievable tiny. And it comes with GPIO ports. That this is the first one I've seen where it's really hard to read, but all the GPIO ports are labeled.
Wow.
Okay. That to me right there is just a sign of professionalism. That they actually take the time to label them, because I've never seen that before. The other connectors on it, there's a little, I think it's called a MUX connector right here, that little white part. You can hook up an external battery to it. Right there, built on.
That looks like the same connector as my drone for a battery.
Right, exactly. Then on the other side, you have 3 ports. One is a full-size USB, one is a micro USB, and then there's the round analog. That round analog is both video and audio. analog. The micro USB is for power. The pledge that Steve did, he got the analog video component, I believe it is, cable, yellow, white, red.
No, it's component.
Okay, component, thank you. And it's actually in a little bit of a case where the back side is a little place, so it's much harder to melt. I also believe, and this is one thing I can never remember, this thing has either 4 or 8 gigs of onboard what's called eMMC, which is the onboard storage hard drive. So what that means is that you don't have to put in an SD card and load your stuff to it. Instead, the OS is installed directly on the chip on the device, and this comes preloaded with a customized version of, I believe, Debian that has more than a couple of tools on it. And it also has built on the chip Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. So right out of the box, you hook up the one USB to, of course, a hub if you want to, or if you have your little dongle for your keyboard mouse. And then your power, and then that analog video out, and you have a quote-unquote full-fledged computer that I'm sure is not quote-unquote powerful enough to do quote-unquote real work on. But I don't care. This little thing is frigging awesome, is what I got to say. Awesome. That's 4 gigabytes of onboard storage, 1 gigahertz single-core processor, 512 meg of RAM. This is not a powerhouse. To me, this is a little custom DIY IoT miracle board. And I say miracle board because it's so small, it has everything on it, and it runs straight Debian out the box. Debian is the most versatile, I'll say, version of Linux out there, at least in my opinion. Wi-Fi 802.11 BGNN Bluetooth 4.0 as well. So,
wow.
I mean, I don't know what this little thing can't do. And their target goal is still $9 when this thing goes for full shipment, which I believe is not until June when you can just buy one outright.
I think your friend at work has a good chance of getting done what he needs to do with it. That's, I mean, if you can get the coding on there for a dimmer switch or, you know, on off via the Bluetooth or Wi-Fi, perfect for what it sounds like he's trying to do.
Right. Oh, yeah. Now, the other thing, Debian out the box, Ubuntu, you can run on this, Android, and they just announced less than 2 weeks ago a cooperation, a venture, a joint venture, whatever, with the Remix OS people, Jide. So look out, is what I gotta say. Look out, because this little thing, I think, is going to become obsessively popular. I think the community around this is going to be like the community behind the Raspberry Pi, expansive and everywhere. Also, I'll say, if you get the HDMI or the VGA output, all it is a little hat board that fits right into the GPIO pins that you sit right on top of it. So it only increases the overall width by a very little bit. That was also very intelligently thought out, I'll say. I cannot wait to play with this puppy, period. So I got to thank Steve Sears. Steve, you are the frigging man. He's not able to go to Linux Fest Northwest this year, but I promise you the next time I see this guy, I'm buying him, I don't know, steak dinner. Beer, something, because I owe him, because this is awesome.
Thank you, Steve.
Yes, and in very typical fashion, I'm going to play with it hopefully only a week or two. That's my goal. And then I was going to send it out to the guys here, and it's going to be one of those things. If one of them says they love it, they have a passion for it, it's theirs. If both of them play with it and don't want it, we will give it away on the show.
You're not going to give it to your friend who wants to put it in the box?
No, he can buy one. He gets paid good money.
<All right. laughs>
He makes more money than me.
Eric, you were just talking about a dimmer switch. A few months ago, I actually purchased a dimmer switch that was that allowed me to shut it off remotely, you know, via my my home security system. It was fairly inexpensive. But with something like that door, that's something you can definitely tie in a sensors, motion sensors, heat, camera, just in one nice little box, you know, and at a very, very small footprint at a very low price.
Yeah. And if you get the battery and you hook up external power and use the battery only as emergency backup, that only adds, I believe, about $10 to the price, which is insane. Yeah, because that's the whole thing. I've been playing with more than a couple of these pies, doing more than a couple of things. The one thing in hindsight I wish I had on all of them is emergency power, which is why, like at my house, I used to always run my servers on laptops. It wasn't because they were powerful, wasn't because they were quiet. It was because they had built-in battery backup. I could run it on the server, and I knew I could lose power for half an hour, and if it came back up, everything would still be up and running because I had built-in emergency backup power. I didn't have to worry about buying an APC, UPC unit, yada, yada. Worry about changing the battery out, blah, 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 blah. I just ran it on a freaking laptop, and I would love to have that on my Pi devices. I learned a little bit in the last week how to do it better, but the way the chip does it just seems very painless and easy.
What if it'll, I don't know if you said this already before, but I'm wondering if it will allow you to run it via battery. And then when the power does kick out, then there's no interruption. It's just a clean, steady source of power. So it uses the AC to keep the battery charged. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Like a laptop?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm 99% sure the chip has it built in where you don't have to worry about it and it does it. For other devices, you got to buy a little extra add-on board. And what I'll do is I'll bring this link next to the show. It's actually a YouTube video on our spreadsheet. It's line 89. This is how to build a solar-powered Raspberry Pi. And I am not the ecological, you know what I mean. I'm not the eco-friendly guy. So first when I saw this, I thought, what? Oh, okay, whatever. You probably got to hold it right up directly next to the sun to get good power, blah, 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 blah. But then after watching this video for a couple seconds, first thing I noticed was he's using, I believe, the original Raspberry Pi, which means the new one should run better, period, okay? And he was happy with his result. If you go to the video and go up, I'm trying to find where it's at in the video. It's at least, there it is. It's about 5 minutes into the video, and he holds up a little board with a fat capacitor on it. And there's a couple inputs and outputs. There's like an analog DMC jack. There's a USB jack, and then there's two, I believe I call them MUX connectors on it. And that's the magic board. That's the quote-unquote magic board where you hook up your external power, you hook up your battery power, and then both, and then that single board connects to the Raspberry Pi. So it regulates power, and it does the automatic switching from live to backup without losing anything, and nothing reboots. It's just consistent power. So this, once again, is the... Okay, I have not really done anything to any of my Pis except put a game emulator on it, let the kids play it, put Android on it, run YouTube on it upstairs, load whatever on it and just use it for single task kind of thing. This looks to me like the first project, quote unquote, I've seen that I could actually do and maybe not burn down the house.
Yeah.
So I am keeping this one in the radar. I'm keeping this one in my bookmarks. I'm keeping this one to where every couple of weeks I'll look at it. And I would really like to do this. But of course, I would not like to do it with a banana pie, because while I love the fanfare and I love the community and I love the hardware and I love everything about the Raspberry Pi, I would much rather do this with a Banana Pro, because the performance I've seen out of a Banana Pro seems to be better than a Raspberry Pi, with a caveat. Last week they released true OpenGL drivers for the Raspberry Pi 2, which means when it comes to video performance now, it is going to be super hard to beat the Raspberry Pi. It's going to get a lot better, a whole lot better.
I'm going to have to watch this video all the way through, because I have a portable solar panel like that that actually has a micro USB connection on it now. And it looks like, I don't know what kind of connection he originally had on there, but it looks like he's got some heat shrink tubing in this video, hooking it up into that thing with a different kind of connector. So I wonder if maybe that solar panel was originally micro USB and he switched it over to something else.
He doesn't show you.
Okay. Well,
and then when you go look at the pieces and parts, what you see is the DC jack and that little board, the DC jack that plugs into it came with that little board. It did not come with the solar panel.
Okay.
So he put it on
that's
there.
Yeah, that's what it looked like. I've got the solar panel I had, I tried to charge my Note 4 off of it, just plain, you know, and it was not enough to charge up my Note 4. But I also hooked up a battery, a charger, you know, like a rechargeable battery for a phone, and it was enough to show that it was charging that. So I know it had some output, but just not enough to to satisfy the Note 4, which, you know, that's probably asking a lot for a solar panel. And I'm not, you know, I don't live on the equator, so I'm not real close to the sun. So, I've kind of been wondering, well, what am I going to do with the solar panel? Because it's, you know, a nice little unit, folds up nice, and it's bigger than the one that's in this video. So, yeah, this is giving me some ideas, hopefully.
Right, yeah, and the real reason I don't like solar panel this stuff is the fact that it just trickles power in. You can't really do anything active with it that I've seen unless you're doing something super light and easy, aka nothing like a Note 4. Okay, nothing like a Note 4.
Right.
So the idea of using the solar to basically trickle charge the battery, that's perfect to me. Because then I can hypothetically leave the solar panel in my car when I go into work, because during work, that battery could last, if I use the right battery, 10 hours. So then I just, you know, to me, that's smart. I like the idea of using it like that. He's using it with a solar panel converter, Raspberry Pi original with a small, like 3.2-inch touchscreen built into the case. So he is using it like a mobile solar-powered handheld computer tablet kind of thing.
And I've got a lot of the parts in this video now. This gets me fired up. If I could give a little bit of a Raspberry Pi update, I'm kind of crashing and burning on the Raspberry Pi at this point. I haven't been able to really find a good output for video from it because all of my monitors are old and they all have only VGA and DVI. I don't have an HDMI to DVI converter, but I do have a HDMI to VGA converter, and it's not working too well yet. So Dor gave me the idea to try some of these other monitors because I've only tried one. So I was going to go kind of crazy with the Raspberry Pi OS first. So I was going, you know, I saw the Tizen came out for it and Chromium came out for it. So I tried installing a couple, you know, of those things to the micro SD card and then plugged them into the monitor. Nothing happened. So I didn't know where I was failing at. I didn't know if it was just the monitor or what. So I ended up putting, what's the name of the Raspbian name? Is it girl's name or something? Jesse. So I put Jesse on it, and honestly, my red and green lights were flashing differently, so it may have been more than just the video output. But I hooked it up to an old kind of half broken 50-inch LG plasma, and it showed display. So we do have an OS. The Raspberry Pi is functioning. I can go from here, but I think I'm either going to buy a monitor or try to find another one of these to work.
Okay, well, here's my question, Eric. You do know Raspbian is Raspberry Debian. And do you know the Debian name stuff? Because you said Jesse, you know, girl's name. Every version of Debian for I don't even know how many years now. I believe it might be 10 plus years, whatever. Toy Story 1, I believe, is when it started. Every version of Debian is named after a Toy Story character.
Oh, I didn't know
that. If you remember, Jesse was the
character. Yeah.
So that's, and the one thing I hate about Debian is I know the numbers, I don't know the name. So every time the name changes, I just go through this whole thing where I want to install Debian. Oh God, now let me go Google YouTube, Google Debian Jesse name. And then, you know, or Debian 7.0 name or Debian 7.8.0 name, because I can never remember. But yes, Jesse is the current new hotness for Debian.
Have they already had Debian Buzz?
I don't remember. But in the last couple of weeks, we've had a couple OSs launch for the Raspberry Pi. Tizen, I don't know if you guys remember or know the origins of Tizen.
It was Samsung, right?
No,
Samsung.
No. Samsung just bought Tizen like 2 years ago. Before that, it was owned by the company that did the...
Was it like the Palm Pre?
The touchpad. Well, it was a company that did the touchpad, the tablet that went on, that they said is the future of computing and then put on sale 30 days later for $90.
Oh, was that the HP tablet?
Was it HP?
I think so.
I can't. It might be. It's changed hands like 5 times in the last 7 years. It started out as a Nokia product.
It wasn't WebOS, though. It wasn't.
I believe some of the lineage does associate itself with WebOS, but WebOS is different.
It's from Palm, I believe.
This Tizen has been owned by almost every major backer at one point in time. It's changed a lot of hands. And it used to be on the old, the cell phones that you could throw it at a moving train and it wouldn't break. Nokia. The Nokia internet tablet, the little handheld tablet you would get, that was the origins of Tizen. This thing has been around for a long time. This has been the hardcore Linux guy's dream of Linux on tablets, Linux on smartphones, Linux, you know, and now they're coming out of a Raspberry Pi distribution. I hope it gains traction, because it hasn't gained any traction for like the last 10 years, it seems like. And the Chrome OS, I saw that, Eric. I didn't get a chance to look at it. I'll be surprised if it's real Chrome OS and not Chromium.
It's Chromium. Like it is Chromium.
Okay.
And they had two different ones. They had a server and a base, and then they had two more. There was a media center and something else that are yet to come. And I tried it. I downloaded the base version, but I didn't, like I said, I didn't have a video output that was working correctly to find out if it was actually booting up or not.
I'm kind of interested in the media server. I didn't know they had a media server flavor.
They it's coming. They don't have it yet.
Okay.
Well, they don't, but I am sure if you just look for Open Media Vault Raspberry Pi, you will find a media server version perfectly form-fitting right to the Raspberry Pi. And I know, and I think, thank thought, you could even, if you wanted to, put Plex on the Raspberry Pi as a server, but I wouldn't encourage you to do it, because Plex needs a little bit of horsepower.
Yeah. Plex isn't really a good...
to do this.
Maybe for a front-end box, but definitely not a back-end.
Yeah, here you go. What I'm looking at is on Linux.press is where I was able to first find this ping about Chromium OS. Then it links over to Softpedia, and then when I'm at Softpedia, will I get a link to Mediafire? Oh, I trust that. Don't you trust that?
I trust about as much that. As I trust not, Softpedia.
Yeah, I'm not downloading that. Twitter.com/ChromiumRaspi. And as soon as I go there, the first thing is I see a picture of Sam Kinison. And if you don't know who Sam Kinison is, he is not. He was not family friendly.
Not at all.
So I can't find where I had it. But they had a 0.4 release, and that's the one I tried to download. They have also now a 0.41 that added support for every. They said virtually every USB Wi-Fi adapter. So that they're moving fairly quickly. It sounds like with the development of this OS.
Well, I'm sorry to sound like Foghorn Leghorn, but I say every.
They said virtually every. I know that's a pretty big there, buddy.
Yeah, because there's a whole bunch of older Broadcom chips that I guarantee you it doesn't support. But yeah, I would encourage you, if you want to try this, twitter.com/ChromiumRaspi, links will be of course in the notes. Go there, check them out, follow them, see what the latest one is. It looks like they don't.
Yeah, I found it on Reddit. That's how I got my links to download.
Right. They don't even have a website, okay? You know how much a website costs, Eric?
No, I don't pay for one.
It's free, okay? You can get a .tk domain for free. You can then start a free Dropbox account, enable the web part, and point your .tk domain at that and have a quote-unquote website for free. They don't even have a website. And when a project does not even have a website, that shows me a certain amount of disorganization. If you do install this, if I would install this, I would literally just install it to see how it works and, you know, is it usable or not? And then I would stop using it, because I wouldn't trust this until it becomes a real boy. Right now, it's still made out of wood and has string hanging from it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like how you asked me that, because I think you've been to DiniMedia.com, haven't you?
Yes. But you paid for that one, so that's different. But yeah. So I encourage everyone, keep trying these other OSs. You will find something that you really do like, love. And as far as media servers, distros, Brian, we can take a look at them if you want. We can try to gather up a whole bunch of them, because I guarantee there has to be at least three or four. NAS for free probably has one. Open Media Vault probably has one. Don't know what else. But there has to be at least one or two more out there.
Yeah, I'll be looking at a few of those. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Speaking of good names, the .4 change log on this Chromium OS for the Raspberry Pi, it's codenamed Lenny Bruce.
Oh, there's a family-friendly guy, right?
I'm not sure who that is. But
you don't know who Lenny Bruce is?
I've heard
is.
The name. I don't know who it is.
Oh, my Lord, Eric.
If he's in the movies, that I don't watch movies.
No.
Oh.
No.
I don't. Shelt.
Yeah, I'm literally just typing so I can make sure. Yeah. Lenny Bruce was who I thought was. old comedian, extremely edgy. No matter how you think of someone being edgy today, if you were to take a time warp back to the late 60s, this guy was edgier. You know what I mean? That's all I'll say. Because he was, he died in 66. If you go back like the mid 60s, early 60s, this guy was the most controversial comic of all time. The mouth on him would make women pass out. Out of, you know, it was just unbelievable. But, yeah, supposedly he was a, you know, whatever, okay, of comedy. Very cool. Now I want to ask you guys real quick, the one thing that I saw on the notes that was in there the whole week that I told myself I was going to try to do, I didn't get a chance to, and I'll tell you why in a little bit, was the Amazon Echo link on line 84. Amazon Echo automation hack with a Raspberry Pi. It's a link to a YouTube video. Now, I don't actually, here's the problem. I didn't even get a chance to sit down and watch the video.
Oh, I watched the whole video.
Okay, then you tell me, does this merely interact with someone who owns Amazon Echo, or does this replicate, duplicate Amazon Echo type functionality with a Raspberry Pi?
No, this interacts with the, basically, you hook your Raspberry Pi up to the Amazon Echo remote control, and then you can have her, what's her name, Azalea, or Alexa, and she will then say anything you ask her to say to a point. She tries some, like, he tries to get her to say duck, and she says dog, and it's kind of close, but it's just a way to manipulate the Amazon Echo to do things it wasn't meant to.
First off, if you watch the video, I apologize for the guy's hat.
That comes in later.
I will.
There's a reason for it.
I don't care. I have to apologize.
I love it. Let me tell you something.
That's going to
I love it.
That's going to make some people. That's going to make some people immediately stop watching the video. So I encourage you to. Hey, here's right now. I can tell you the only reason I would have this then is if I had an Amazon Echo at the house, and if I could remotely, when my kids are there, have the Amazon Echo say, "Hello, children. I'm watching you." just to freak them out.
That's probably about what you can do. That's one of the things you could do with it.
Okay, so basically, I don't want to say it's not useful, but it's not really functional. It's more entertainment.
Yeah, that's what it seems like.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it looks, you know, kind of crazy the way it's wired up to the Amazon remote, but it seems to work.
Oh yeah, it is kind of crazy, ain't it?
He's got a breadboard hooked up to the top of the Raspberry Pi, and you know, he knows he's did some engineering here to make this thing happen. And it's not perfect, well, but then it's a funny video because he kind of messes up, and then later he figures it out, and he's like, has Alexa say, "Ha ha ha! I was just messing with him. I could really say the word subscribe because he couldn't get her to say subscribe." But it's good. It's a good video. It's entertaining.
Well, I'll say then he's much smarter than his hat or his hair gives him credit for.
Yes. Oh yes. Well, look at those glasses. You know he's smart.
I had the same ones.
I know. That's why I like it.
Okay, so it's at least interesting, but unfortunately completely useless to me because I do not own an Amazon Echo.
No, and here I am, kicking myself in the butt for not buying them when they were $100. I just hope when that new one comes out. And you know, when I watched this video, it piqued my interest. I went back to Amazon again, and now it says March 20th or March 23rd or 3rd or something. It's got a new date that it's out of stock until then, and I don't know if that's the date that they come out with the new one or if that's just when they restock the ones they're selling now, but I hope they offer it to me again for $100 because I'm gonna I'll be like, Brian, please take my money, you know?
Yeah, $100 is a good sweet spot for
Man, especially when you know they're selling them for $179 all day long.
Yeah,
and I really miss that boat, and it's come a long way since then, you know. It was new, who knows what it was going to do back then. And then, you know, that's right after Google came out with their magic, you know, orb thing, that little glowing ball that failed. And you never know what's going to fail and what's going to stick.
I think it was horrible.
But they gave them for free, you know, to the people who pre-ordered them. So that, you know, there's always that, I guess.
Oh, no. Okay, now the reason I didn't get a chance, this is my excuse at least. Yeah, I'm giving you guys. The reason I didn't get a chance to even look at this really was because midweek father-in-law, usually when he asks for help with his computer, I tell him, okay, are you at your computer? Yes, you are. Okay. Sit in front of the computer. Now his computer turns on. Oh, it is turned on. Okay. So go ahead and hit the start button. Go over there. No, not restart. Power off. Okay, power off. Okay. Tell me when it's all the way powered off. Okay, it'll take a long time to power off. Okay. Okay, it's powered off. Okay. Now unplug it, put it in your truck, and take it to Geek Squad. Because I...
Oh, man, Norm, you were... I thought you liked your father-in-law.
I do. I love him.
Take it anywhere but there, then.
He is fantastic. There is nobody around me I can find that's doing competent computer repair, I'll say that. And I'm not working on computers. And I'm not working on Windows computers. I would much rather take a hammer to my own hand than work on a Windows computer.
Okay? Sorry, my hand's swelled up. I really can't work on it. I just got done hitting on the hammer.
But he called me up and said, can you come over tomorrow night? Blah, blah, blah. They've got a printer. As soon as I walked in the house, I said, the printer ain't going to work. He said, what do you mean? I said, the printer says it's made for Windows 7. He said, yeah. I said, you don't have Windows 7. What do you mean? You have Windows 10. Even I know that. You got forced to upgrade because you clicked the button. Oh, so it ain't going to work? Does it say Windows 10 on the side of the box? He said, no. I said, it ain't going to work. Let's get a new printer. So they took it back.
That got a new doesn't printer. Mean anything. It can work with Windows 10. It can.
I'm not going to be the guy to sit there and slog for whatever amount of time. Just go get a new
printer.
I've
never had a...
Thank God he doesn't listen to this. Thanks, Eric, for just throwing me
I've never had a problem yet with a printer not working on Windows 10 that worked fine with Windows 7.
So then he went and got a new printer. I go over there, and what did he get? A freaking wireless printer.
Oh, there you go. Now. There you go.
No. A wireless printer is nothing more than a time bomb. Sooner or later, it's going to lose its connection, and it's not going to connect again, then it's not going to print. They suck. They all suck. So I had in my bright head, hey, you know, I have, you know, maybe one or two pies just sitting here doing nothing. Maybe I can turn it into a print server. And we just got an email not that long ago from a guy who sounded really smart who said he can do a print server. So I'm starting to look at doing a little print server for him to where it's just sitting next to the printer, connected via USB to the printer, connected to his network. So then from their laptop, they can wirelessly print to a reliable connection to the printer. Here was the one hookup hang up. I also wanted to try to put something easy on the Pi so I could remote into his network and do troubleshooting. I would like to help him when I can, but I'd much rather use tools I'm accustomed to versus an infected Windows laptop to evaluate what's going on with his network. But TeamViewer is my go-to. It's my standard. It's easy. It's really easy. It works on every platform. Oh, wait, no, it doesn't. It doesn't work on ARM. So there is no TeamViewer that I can find for the Raspberry Pi. So everything else would involve manipulating his router firewall and punching holes through his firewall. I don't want to do that. So I might look at a thing where at boot time, it tries to do a reverse SSH, which is like command line connection, back to my computer. I don't know. But I'm going to try to make him a wireless print server, connect to his new HP printer, and make him happy. Because I would like it when he's happy. He's a big guy. He could crush me with his one hand, so I want to be nice to him.
Did you at least get his printer working before he left? I mean, his new wireless one?
No, and yes, because what I did was I went into the printer, I disabled the wireless, I went to my backpack, I pulled out a 10-inch USB cable, hooked up to the back of the printer, said, there you go, your printer's working.
But what about my laptop?
I hooked it up to his laptop. Of course, Windows is stupid, and it didn't automatically install the drivers, like, I don't know, OpenSUSE does without even blinking an eye. So I had to literally start... printer, devices and printers, add printers, detect printer, identify printer, that's the right printer, go to the internet, download the driver, is this the right driver? Yes, it's the right driver. Install the driver. Install the driver. Install the driver. Install the driver. 5 minutes later, install the driver. Install the driver. Install the driver. And then finally it finishes and it says, do you want to print a test page? I hit yes. And then it says, bong, this application closed without expectation.
Oh, man.
Oh, great.
Something went wrong. Frowny face.
Right. So I just went back into printer properties, print test page. It printed. I said, there you go. Your printer's printing.
So I recently set up a wireless printer. A cheap, you know, I went and bought the cheapest Canon printer I could buy. It was $29. Wireless, even. And I took the USB cable with me, but the way my parents had their desktop and their, the USB cable was like 1 inch too short. So I had, and it's not that they have anything to print wirelessly. I just didn't have a long enough cable. So I hooked theirs up wirelessly. And it's been 4 weeks, probably 3 weeks, and I haven't ask them if it's still working yet. So I'll find out if it's still working sometime soon, maybe.
Right. Well, I'll say first, is it obvious I'm bitter against Windows? I don't know.
No, I think you like drivers, though, it sounds like.
Well, I hate drivers, and I hate printers because it's moving parts. I don't understand moving parts. They confuse me. I'm a simple man. But do either of you guys know, have wireless printers got more competent? Because I know when I mess with them, they would always just become stupid after a while and not connect.
They, in my experience, they have gotten better. The early ones were the worst. Oh my gosh. Hours trying to get these things to work. And because my customers were always high-end clients. They wanted the newest, latest, greatest thing, and they loved photography. So they, literally hours and hours on these wireless HP printers back in the day when HP was the only one making them, and they were horrible. Some of them would make themselves their own Wi-Fi hotspot sometimes, and it was bad. But I did have to use the install CD to get this little Canon running, though, which was, I'm like, well, I just assumed I could just download the correct driver from the internet. Well, that didn't work, so I had to use an install CD. Good thing the computer came with a CD slot, you know. But I was a little miffed by that, but it did get up and going better than normal, or better than they used to. And I'll have more experience on this because I bought myself the same $29 wireless Canon printer because, you know, after you have the same, because I'm running off a $29 Canon wired printer from like 8 years ago, and after a while, you know, you just know you're going to buy an ink cartridge that's not going to work or something's going to...
A 29 printer? I can't get any work done with that.
Why?
I don't know. I just felt the same.
It's been great. I'll never buy a $129 printer again because the $29 printers work beautifully.
You can't get any real work done with that. That's the title of the show, Real Work.
I had a different title written down.
Oh, yeah?
Well, hold on. Well, Brian, do you have any experience with... wireless printers set up?
I do, and I agree 100% with Eric. I haven't installed any. Actually, you know, I did one for my father-in-law not too long ago, and it was pretty seamless, actually. It wasn't that bad. But when they first came out, they were brutal. But the one that I installed for my father-in-law, the last one that I installed before that was, gosh, maybe four or five years ago. So I'm not... I don't touch them as much as I used to. I'm old school. I prefer hardwired. So we have a network printer that we can just send prints to. The thing about this one is when we upgraded, gosh, I'm thinking back from Windows 7, it's a, you know, it's an all-in-one. It's got scanner and all that fun stuff into it. So we upgraded, we lost the ability to scan. So I said, hey, HP, what happened to my network scanner you took away? The only way you're going to get that is if you had XP on it. So I'm like, what are you doing? So I noticed the only way that I can actually get functionality with network scanning is if I install a Linux machine. Yeah, so right. Linux would allow me to do network scanning, but Windows 10, Windows 7, tough luck.
Wow. And this new printer, the one I have does finally run out of black ink and I hook this up, it'll always have a USB wire hanging off the back of it. You know, and I can plug in real quick. But I was just thinking, well, perhaps I may want to print from my phone or my tablet at some point, and I'll just give it a try.
I can print from my tablet and my phone using the network printer. It's have the drivers from the Play Store.
Yeah, there's two or three apps you can download. Like Canon has an app, HP has an app, and I can't remember. There's another one I saw where you just install that on your phone. And it gives you the ability right there from Android. And I believe iOS is the same thing where you can print right from there. It's like a share. Instead of sharing a web page to email, you share your web page to printer.
Are you guys familiar with the Motorola Atrix? Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. It was the phone that plugged into the screen?
Yes. I thought that was going to be the end-all be-all when I first saw that. I said, they have a really good idea. I'm curious to see if this is going to take off.
Well, typically the people who do something first are rarely successful at it. And I'll say this. Do you have a camera in my house, Brian?
Oh, wow. You know,
because like a week ago, I got myself an Atrix dock because you could, because I saw people who said you can take a Raspberry Pi or a Pi and turn it into a quote-unquote laptop with a 10-hour battery. I've since bought like $30 worth of cables, and I can't get the damn thing working. And I can't tell if it's either an HDMI ground issue or something with the USB, but there's something not responding back from the Pi to the laptop, telling it, okay, the device is on, keep the screen on. Because once in a while, I can get the screen to come on, but like 6 seconds later, it turns off. And that's because the laptop doesn't think the other device that's connected to is physically on. So I got to figure that out. But why do you ask about the
laptop? I think I have a remedy for you, Dor. And I hope it's not some snake oil. But we have an Indiegogo. I think it's on, where is this sitting on the spreadsheet here? Number 87. An Indiegogo that's in progress right now. And I believe they are not yet complete on their funding. It looks like they have about 22 days left to go. Yeah, 22 days left. They're looking for $80,000. And what this is pretty much the same principle as the Motorola Atrix. So we have a a slim type of laptop, 14-inch piece, laptop shell. It's like a clamshell with a keyboard. And it's doing, I think the highest resolution they have on this thing is 720p. Yeah, so we have 1366 by 768 display ratio. It's got Bluetooth 4.0. It's got a lithium battery, 10,000 mAh battery. It's got HDMI mini and two USB ports on it. No USB 3.0, which I was kind of shocked to see. But they're allowing you to connect a Raspberry Pi, a cell phone, a tablet to this little machine here and turn it into a full-fledged computer.
Wow.
It's kind of like the same thing we were talking about before.
It is.
What I really find interesting, they have some different models other than the clamshell design. They displayed a PC desktop with a much larger display screen, and it's got like a on the base where the screen sits on, there's like a little scoop, like a C-shaped scoop, and you can just set your device right on the base of the monitor there with the keyboard. And so when you upgrade your device, that's your PC. And I just thought this was a brilliant idea, and I love the design. I've seen a few implementations of this. Matter of fact, I was looking one up earlier. It was from a 2014 campaign, and it was a horrible, horrible design. But the idea of it, I just think, is really, really good.
Yeah, I'll say a lot of the Android devices, even if it doesn't have an HDMI or mini HDMI port on it, what you can do is you can connect via what's called MHL. Virtually every Samsung, for instance, via USB, you can connect. One end of the cable is micro USB, the other end is HDMI, and it will do the video like straight through it. So just because your phone doesn't have mini HDMI doesn't mean you couldn't use this. Honestly, this desktop quote-unquote version is the exact same looking, basically functionally, I've seen, yeah, like you said, 2+ years ago. The other company that was toying with this exact same idea, I want to say, was Asus. It wasn't the Zen phone. It was the phone Zen or something. It was backwards, where the phone would slip in the back of a tablet and it became a bigger screen, or you could slip it into a different device and you would have yourself a quote-unquote full-fledged computer. I do think the power of phones are getting to the point to make this actually usable, where you can get some work done. But the idea of a Pi, to me, this is the perfect thing. The 10,000 milliamp battery should give it really good life, I'll say. What's the starting... I think the starting contribution was... they only had three levels, which I think is... I'm shocked. I say shocked. $99, receive the next dock from the initial batch. Then you got to pay for shipping. $79 early bird special sold out. And then the $119 version, and that's it. 22 days left, $80,000. This thing's going to have to pick up a lot of steam.
And they're trying to get to 300,000, and they're at 80.
Yeah, I would love it if this could come to fruition, because I do think the hardware is, I think, very nice. I love the fact that it's thin and light. I could literally carry this around, and then when I get to a meeting, connect my phone to it, kind of thing. The only downside is when you're using MHL or you're using Type-C, more than likely you're not going to be able to charge your phone while you're displaying to the screen. Unless with the Type-C, it will actually come back and charge your phone at the same time from the laptop, which if it does that, that's really cool.
If they could just throw a Pico projector in the back of this too, and then I'd be in.
Yeah, this thing looks really nice. It almost reminds me of an ultrabook how thin it is.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I'll say there's something to be said for portability with this kind of thing. A 15-inch, 7-pound laptop is not going to be successful unless it's a gamer's desktop replacement, never going to move laptop. This, it looks really portable, and I really do think could gain traction, but it better gain some traction soon.
Yeah. Hey, they even have a Lenovo type compute stick. Looks like an HDMI PC connected to it via HDMI and USB for power. It's pretty cool.
Very cool. Very cool. Here's something I wanted to bring here, and I'm very sorry. It's the kind of thing I've not had a chance to even come close to looking at. Line 94 in our chat. And I don't know if I've said this before, guys. The reason we say line 94, line 68, line 74, we have combination, Git pocket, if this, then that routine that when we find the link, we share it to our pocket, we tag it, and it automatically gets shoved into a spreadsheet. In that spreadsheet, it takes the show, the page title, and the summary of the page and puts it in our notes. That's what we copy paste directly to the notes for the show. Okay, now this thing, if it does what I think it does, I love and hate it at the same time. Okay, I believe it's called Cayenne, possibly?
Yep,
Cayenne. Okay. I can't believe I got that right. It's at cayenne-mydevices.com. What this is this is what I think of as the only possible successful long-term Internet of Things thing, because the thing that makes the Internet of Things so weak, so vulnerable, so insecure, so hackable is the fact that you're not really the admin of it and somebody else is reliant on updates, upgrades, and security patches. The Internet of Things that you control is like a chip, Orange Pi, Raspberry Pi, that you can upgrade, you can monitor, you can admin. Of course, that means you have the extra responsibility, but let's not go there right now. Okay. What this is Cayenne is you basically go get started for free, sign up for the beta. First thing it asks you is your Raspberry Pi connected to the network? If you say yes, what it looks, and I didn't get a chance to do this, it looks like you basically just copy one line of code down to your Pi, you run it, and then your Pi becomes connected to this cloud service, this cayenne.mydevices.com. And then what you can do is either on the web interface or soon, or on your iPhone or soon on your Android, you'll be able to create events and triggers based upon sensory input, time input, scheduled inputs, or things like that to basically do Internet of Things hub type controlling. I know I didn't do a great job explaining it, but think of this as if this, then that for your Internet of Things device, or think of it as your own personal customizable Internet of Things playground. This could be really cool. This could be really big. I don't know. I think I really like the idea of it, except for the fact that now Cayenne-My Devices has a complete direct line right into my network. That's the only thing.
Looking at this, I would describe it too. Just in one of the scenarios is if you have a Raspberry Pi hooked to your network, basically you could then from another device have a dashboard of everything that's happening around that Raspberry Pi. And like the example of a living room, it looks like it's hooked to a living room computer, and it's telling you, well, this might be the Raspberry Pi statistics, but it's telling you like you could have the humidity, the temperature, and the lights that are on in the room, and all kinds of stuff about the world around that Raspberry Pi.
Right, and damn it, I'm sorry, I'm sorry I just said that, but damn it. Okay. Sometimes when you get what you ask for, you really shouldn't have asked for it. And I know TeamViewer is like this. TeamViewer, if I would be able to put on my Pi, would then have complete direct line right into the Raspberry Pi. So here's where I'm a hypocrite. TeamViewer has been around a while. I kind of have faith in them. They haven't screwed up their reputation yet, so I think they're still okay. Unfortunately, I asked for it earlier. Well, now I got it. Cayenne-My Devices will also allow me to remote directly into the Pi from my phone, and I do not believe you have to be on the same network to do it.
Nice.
So if I put this on the print server at my father-in-law's house, then I could remote into it.
Do you need me to send you an iPod Touch?
No, because soon it's going to be available for the Android device. Even in the customization, when you're building your Internet of Thing action reaction event, you even have direct access to the GPIO pins where you can configure and say GPIO 12 and 13 are the power and ground for this light switch. So like an example where I could use it is, instead of worrying about QoSing my kid's computer when I'm getting ready to do a podcast, I could literally have this device say, put it up in his room and say, okay, now at 8:55, send a shutdown signal to his computer. And then at 9 o'clock, cut power to his computer. You know, so that could be useful, I'll say.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if these guys are going to be the one. I do think kind of like the Atrix Lapdoc we said earlier, he who did something first is not always the most successful one, but these guys are the first people I know doing this type of thing. I wish them nothing but success, but I also wish for their sake, they're doing everything to be as secure as possible, and then hopefully success will follow them.
I love these dashboards. They're just very striking, detailed. They look really nice here.
Yeah, that's the kind of look and feel you can tell. This ain't no 14-year-old kid in his basement.
Right.
Yeah, there's some definite experience going on here.
Yeah, I want very those cool devices with no bezels like that at some point.
I know, right?
We'll get a Samsung Galaxy S7 Edge.
Yeah, it's a neat look.
So my understanding is they are kind of in control. We're using their back-end systems, basically.
Yes, and what I wish you could do is connect it to their service, configure it, then disconnect. But I don't think that's possible. And it does look like this is the kind of thing, there is no compiling, there is no pushing or pulling. You're just actively doing it in the interface, and right there on the fly, immediately your Raspberry Pi is going to act and react to what you just did.
Yeah, that's you hit it right on the head, Jordan. That's the thing with home automation. Having home automation in itself is a great, great idea. But having home automation where it's connected to the outside world, now you're asking for trouble. Because I don't care who you are. I don't care how strong your firewall is. One way or another, someone's getting it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I'll say like this. I was talking to a buddy earlier, a couple buddies earlier. And like, I'm a firm believer in when something works and is more secure, you have to do it. You have to do it. You have to do it. Like I could see, and I'm sorry to use catchphrases from, you know, technology, but one of the companies that I could see pivot and become the in-home Internet of Things hub control center is somebody like If This Then That. But it would require them to either sell a device that you connect to your network or something you install on a Pi or another small computing device. So all of that control is done locally. It can connect to the internet to get updates to what it can do, what it can connect with, what APIs it can use to connect with everything else. But it needs to be controlled in the house because of one big thing: emergency, latency, and reaction time. Because if my smoke alarm goes off, I don't want it to have to go out to the internet to do something before it decides to do something else back inside the house. You know what I mean? If my newborn is crying and I have a noise thing going off, I don't want latency involved with that. I don't want somebody getting DDoS on the outside affecting the stability of things inside my network. Not to mention the security thing. Just for stableness, just for efficiency, I would want it to be in my house. And I could see If This Then That charging $40 a year or whatever, for you to have a little device that you just plug up to something, to the back of your router or whatever, and it becomes your If This Then That dashboard for your triggers, events, and reactions to do all of your Internet of Things devices. Because the Internet of Things devices should, as far as I'm concerned, be stupid. All they should do is have the ability to post out to the network a alert like, oh, I'm out of milk. it should never have the power to do anything about it. That's to me where the hub should say, oh, I see the refrigerator just said it's out of milk. Oh, let me look in my database. My database says if it's Sunday and we're out of milk, send a text message to the wife saying we're out of milk. You know what I mean? I want the hub to be able to control that, not each individual device. But of course, I'm not making these devices.
There are some things leading in that way that you're talking about, Dor. There's like, I was watching another video that had like the Wink connected home hub. I don't know if you're familiar with that. I just put a video in our links at the very bottom. Well, it hasn't been there yet. But this guy, and if anybody wants to watch this video, just do it's on YouTube. It's called Voice Control Home Automation via Amazon Echo and Siri HomeKit.
That's a lot to search, Eric.
I know. Well, you type in Echo Siri Automation, and it'll probably be one of the first couple links. But this guy has a really cool little video gaming machine hooked up to it. He's got a big screen hooked up to it. He's got some lighting behind his big screen, you know, like some bias lighting. And he also talks about how he can turn off his kids' laptops at certain times just by talking to Siri or Echo. And he actually says the Echo works better for all of this. And he shows great demonstrations of it all working. He's got it going on. I'd like to follow some of his procedures on how he got all this stuff going on in his house.
Okay, first thing he needs is cable management.
No, he explains it at the beginning. That it's not usually like that. Okay. If you want, yeah, right. It is. It does look like a mess. No, he explains that in the beginning, that this is just that part right there is just because he doesn't have another TV or something hooked up or something like that. But just give it. It's a little 7-minute video. Give it a watch. It gives you a good idea of where things can go and how easy voice automation, how that enhances some of this home automation that our voice control does.
Very cool.
But once again, there's that $179 piece of hardware sitting in that mix that I still haven't I don't have in my.
Gotcha. Okay, very cool. Yeah, we went on for well over an hour here. We're still going to have extra notes in here, and I will say again, everybody out there, a couple things. One, we will be on iTunes. I just submitted us to iTunes. We will be on iTunes, just don't know when. We have to wait for the grand, high, exalted master iTunes to say, oh yeah, you are a valid podcast, and then we'll be on iTunes. If you guys have ideas for Patreon, you have to let us know, or else this is all you're going to get. Nothing more. Just audio. Delayed audio, in fact.
AM quality audio, maybe.
Yeah. Eric, is there any last things you want to say?
If you want to check out the Google Plus postings and things, if you want something that you don't want read on the air, but you kind of like to, you know, let us know about or ask us, check out our community in Google Plus. I know I just got exalted with a moderator status on it, as well as Brian. So it looks like Brian's quite a bit more active in there than I am so far. So that's good. He's doing really good in there.
So what you're saying is the Google Plus community should have been a Patreon reward.
Oh yes, yeah. That's a good point.
Hindsight.
Well, when the next social media thing pops up and takes over Google Plus and Facebook and Twitter, then we'll make that one the Patreon. I'm sure there's something just around the corner that's going to beat them all. Oh yeah. If you want to say something just to me, I'm Eric Ardini on Google Plus, and look me up there, and I will friend you or whatever we do there. I'll circle you.
Yeah, I'd have to say the same thing. I'm pretty active on G+, but not as active as my friend Door-to-Door Geek. He is posting way more often than I am. But some good content, though. Definitely keeps me busy with all the stuff that he's got going on over there. But
yeah, I can't help it. I stumble across way too many things. Everything from Microbit, Octoprint, Raspberry Pi Git server, pi-port.co.uk, Ben Heck, Raspberry Pi stuff. I mean, it just keeps going and going. There's too much stuff out there. I want to thank everyone for downloading. Thank everyone for their support. Do not forget, support those who support you. And right now, the only support we're asking for is feedback. Give us feedback. Send us emails, and do not forget voicemail 7076-PODNUT. That is 7076 PodNut, and you can have your voicemails heard on the show, just like Lord D. You can be among the same rank as a guy named Lord just by sending us a voicemail.
Yeah, and famous.
Very, very famous. And with that, we will talk to everyone again next week.